I think we'll start. Good morning and welcome to part two of mindfulness applied. We're developing skills to put the theory into practice. So last week we gave a general introduction. It's a process that we're sort of developing and building up. So today a little bit, we'll again try to do some practical strategies, but it'll be a little bit theoretical so we get into the proper context and develop more and more practical approaches as we go along. So the basic question that we are focused on is the how. In other words, the theory of mindfulness is fantastic, but the question is how. So we asked that last week, how do we become more mindful? How do we make sure that the intruding thoughts don't paralyze our mind? How do we achieve the concept that the brain rules the heart that we've spoken to many times and so on? So last week, just to review a little bit so we get up to date, we spoke about a few things. We spoke, number one, that mindfulness requires a number of skills. So first of all, just the general concept of mindfulness is the ability to be present, the ability to focus, pay attention on purpose, as we called it, which leads into the concept of developing an ability to achieve inner tranquility, inner calmness, which we call fulfillment. In other words, not just to be present in the moment, but to fully experience the moment and gain inner peace, inner happiness, inner fulfillment from and meaning and purpose from that moment. And then the third skill, of course, is dealing with the intruding thoughts, which is really a bit more the focus of what we're developing this term. Now, last week also we gave that quick, and I'm just going to go through it quickly so we just fresh. We went through that analogy of the bus driver, which is the distinction between the driver and the passengers. In other words, sometimes you can have a good driver, which is like us, where we have the ability to focus, and a person has, perhaps as a person that has a good concentration span and a good skill of being aware and paying attention on purpose, but there's what we call the passengers on the bus, which make it difficult for the driver to pay attention, which are those intruding thoughts that complain, that fight, that scream, and create distraction for the bus driver. So in other words, the point that we're trying to make was that it's not just sufficient to have the ability to pay attention, which in itself is a very hard thing to do. It's hard to be present. It's hard for most people, particularly in today's world, which is so distracting and so fast moving. It's hard to be fully present, but it's much more difficult when we have all those intruding thoughts that come and distract us and make it almost impossible to be present in the moment. And we talked about a list of some of those thoughts, which is resentment, worry, anxiety, fear, a feeling of ego, insecurity, feeling threatened, jealousy, pain, sadness, and so on and so forth. So we started to talk last week about, number one, the concept of da'at, which is the idea of taking theoretical ideas and connecting to them. And it only happens through, and that's the transition between the head and the heart, which happens only through constant revision, constant reflection, taking ideas and thinking about them again and again until we start to connect with them emotionally. And we also spoke about the importance that when we're not that distracted or we're not experiencing a problem, just to practice and to sharpen the general mindfulness tool, which is just doing things like practicing breathing with a particular focus that we spoke about last time, which is being aware of our breath, but being aware of the soul, the inner soul, which comes through the breath, reflections on things like the freshness of each moment, to train ourselves to develop the, to remove things that distract us, like having time each day to put away the phone and other things of technology. And of course, the concept of just taking bite sizes, taking small periods of time and making a special effort to focus, making a special effort to pay attention. So that's just a bit of a review of what we did last week. Now, what I want to do is develop this now a little bit and to understand what we're really trying to tackle. So the most challenging time that we have to concentrate or to focus and be present in the now, to maximize and experience the fullness of every moment, is when something happens to us. In other words, it could be that it's always difficult to focus, and that's general mindfulness. So mindfulness, as we spoke last time, when we talk about mindfulness, is just generally learning to become a more mindful person, to work mindfully, to eat mindfully, to breathe mindfully, to just do whatever we do mindfully. But that's a general concept. But when it becomes particularly difficult is when something happens to us, and it can happen often, and it does happen to everyone on some level, which is unexpected, right? So something we don't expect to happen, something unexpected, not a good thing necessarily, but something that's unwelcome. And normally what happens is when something happens to us that's negative, in this context, in the context of this discussion, the important thing is that it's normally very different to what we expected. You know, it's interesting, as human beings, we go through year after year after year, and we know things don't always turn out the way we expect them to, but we kind of are used to, or we like to be used to, this idea that things are going to turn out a certain way, right? And often they don't. So things happen, and suddenly life takes a turn, something happens, not what we expected, it could be on any level, and we'll talk about this in a moment, and suddenly we sort of distracted and we get like a bit of a jolt. Now, I said last week that I was going to quote a little bit from the book called The Reality Slap by Russ Harris. And I'll just sort of put it in the words that he explains it. And he talks about the reality slap and what he calls the reality gap. Right? Which is, and let me just explain this so we understand it properly. Okay. So, the reality slap, what he calls is when something happens to us which is painful. Okay. Something that's a little bit of a shock, it's unexpected, so it shocks us a little bit. It normally hurts, it can be painful, it can be frustrating, and so on and so forth. Now, what happens after that is that we have an expectation of what's going to happen, and the reality of what is happening. And often there's a big gap in between. Now, when we talk about this gap, let's understand. First of all, this painful blow, or there's something that happens to us that's hurtful, can be on all levels. First of all, it can be very harsh. So it can be things like tragedy, serious illness, financial problems, a loss of a job, bankruptcy, illness, and so on. Those are things which are out of our control, of course, but nevertheless, they are painful. They are things that we don't expect. They are things that we hope won't happen. And sometimes they do. Obviously, we hope and pray that they don't happen, but sometimes they do. But then there's things that happen which are also painful, also unexpected, or we look at them as being unexpected at least, that are sort of day-to-day stuff, right? You have an argument with a friend, a conflict, a sudden flash of envy. We talked about this last week. People sometimes go through periods of suddenly feeling lonely. They just don't feel connected with other people. They thought they were, but they weren't. They suddenly feel isolated. There's this feeling of isolation. One of the most painful feelings is the feeling of isolation. People go through periods that they didn't expect, but they go through periods sometimes of uncertainty. Uncertainty of direction, a crisis. Things aren't working out. What are they here for? What's the meaning of life? People go through a burst of anger. People go through often sudden negative distractions and doubts about oneself. You start doubting yourself. You know, I thought I was successful, but it's not working out. Maybe I'm, you know, that kind of thing. People go through periods of worry where suddenly there's a lot happening and things need to work out, and you start to worry, how's it all going to fall into place? People all of a sudden wake up and there's too much on their plate. They thought they were organized, but suddenly there's seven things happening in their life, and it could be good things even, but they're now sort of getting anxious of how's it all going to fall into place? How are we going to manage, right? Around Pesach time, it normally starts to happen. I'm just kidding. I don't want to say it's like 9 weeks from now, but you know, I'm just saying. Right? My wife tells me that when there's Pesach and a wedding to organize, it's really difficult. Right? I'm not sure why, but no, I'm just kidding. Right? So these are things that happen, and they're not harsh. They can be general life things. Sometimes these are things that come from the outside. Sometimes these are things that we put ourselves in, but they're real. You know, sometimes we have conflict with people, or sometimes we get insulted by someone and we take it seriously when we shouldn't. But it doesn't matter. That's our reality, right? And we all have that reality. We all have personality, rough edges where we get into things that have to do with our personality, or we get jealous of people, or we feel hurt, or we confused, or we insecure, we have feelings of guilt or resentment, or we're not sure we should forgive someone, all these things that happen to us. Some of them shouldn't happen to us, some of them we should be more experienced and more mature perhaps, but we are what we are. We all have a personality which is a work in progress, every one of us, most of us, and except for a few individual righteous people that exist in the world, but otherwise we're all part of that team. And sometimes there's rough patches where we get distracted, and it takes a while till we recover. Am I making sense? Does anyone relate to this? Yeah? Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure I'm not the only one. So. Okay. Because I thought, when I read it, I thought, this sounds like me, but I just wanted to make sure that to make sure that everyone's on the same page here. There's a saying in the Talmud like that. It's true what you're saying. The Talmud says, "Saras rabim chatzin nochama," which means the problem of many is half a comfort. Right? It is, people when people realize they, and that's definitely one of the strategies. Nothing to do with mindfulness, but it's one of the strategies generally of feeling supported and understanding that we're not alone. And people often think they're alone. People often berate themselves and bash themselves up because they think, I've got to be the only idiot in the world that feels this way. But it's not true, and we're all in the same boat. Correct. Now, whatever the shock is, whatever the experience is, often takes time till we recover. Now, sometimes it's a small thing, so we feel upset, we get over it, in the afternoon we're back okay, and it's all good. But often it's not, right? Often things like that, things that are either harsh or not so harsh, things that are external or personality related, sometimes we go into like a daze for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, right? It takes us a lot of time to actually come back. And going back to that concept of the gap, that's what he calls the reality gap. Because as human beings, what we want to try and do often is just make it go away. Because we have a certain model of our life is supposed to look like, and then suddenly someone says something to us, or we have a conflict, or something happens that is very distracting and debilitating, and we've gone to this days of a barrage of thoughts that are sort of just in our mind, swirling around in our mind all the time. And what we'd like to do is make it all go away and go back to normal. And more often than not, that's impossible. It's impossible because the situation doesn't change. The thoughts are there, and we'll talk about it later why. And we can't just make them go away. It's often. The situation, the experience is there, and we can't just make it go away. But it's taking time, and it's during that time that suddenly mindfulness becomes that much more difficult, that it becomes almost impossible. We stop noticing the good things that are happening throughout our day because we're obsessed with the problem. We stop being able to really focus and maximize the potential which is there in every single day. And sometimes weeks can go by and you say to yourself, like, where did it all happen? And sort of, I didn't notice what was happening. Good things have happened throughout the last few weeks which maybe we haven't appreciated. Why? Because we're busy in this gap. Until we learn to accept it, until sort of we get on top of it, it becomes a very distracting period where we lose the opportunity of focusing and being mindful, being present in the now, and experiencing the maximum potential of every moment. It's very, very normal, but it's something that happens to all of us. Obviously, what we need to learn, and this is the foundation, that we need to learn when that happens to us on whatever level, and I'm emphasizing whatever level because it could be on a very harsh level or could be on a very simple level. But what we need to learn, on when any of that kind of thing happens is how to discover inner fulfillment. Because mindfulness comes from an ability not to make it go away, because often it doesn't just go away for many reasons which we'll soon see. So it's a matter of learning to deal with it and to find the fulfillment, the peace, the presence, the awareness, the maximizing of the moment, even despite that which is going on. And that's not an external thing, because more often than not, as we've said so many times, we can't just make the external go away because we have no control of things that happen outside of us. So we have to come back to the principle of what can I do within myself to bring myself back to the moment, bring myself back to the present, to be able to focus on things that are important. How do I do that, and what are the skills that I need to engage in to be able to achieve that? Now, what we have to understand is this, and this is the context which you need to work through. Because in order to do that, it's a combination of many things. Now, there are many, many concepts that we've talked about that obviously help. So from a Jewish point of view, for example, we have lots of different ideas that we need to use when we're going through any patch of difficulty. Things like emunah, things like faith, understanding that helping us accept things because there's a reason for everything. Things like hashkacha pratit, things like that everything happens for a reason and everything happens by divine providence. And even things that people do to me for which they have free choice, we've talked about this before, but if it happened to me, I've got to deal with it and I've got to find meaning and purpose. That's all true. Bitachon, we deal with worry by the concept of trusting and giving up control and letting God run the world and hoping and trusting that things will turn out okay. These are all very, very important concepts. However, these concepts alone don't do the trick. Only. Why? Because the problem when we go through these gaps, when we go through these distracting periods, is that the problem is not only the head, the problem is the heart. Right? In other words, sometimes I can be so convinced of these concepts, and yet I just can't seem to banish those thoughts. I just can't seem to get rid of that resentment. I just can't seem to get rid of that confusion. I can't seem to get rid of that feeling of anxiety or worry or guilt. Why? Because, and this is going to lead into the next concept, because there are many, besides the good concepts that I have in my mind, besides the philosophies and the values which I've been able to develop, and I've studied, and I understand emunah, and I understand bitachon, and I understand divine providence, I understand all of these things, I understand that I have no control, all of these concepts which maybe I've learned and reviewed and discussed and really connected to, the problem is that there are many, many other competing thoughts that are going on in my mind, which those other thoughts are giving birth to other emotions, which are there despite the good concepts that I have in my mind. Are we clear on this? Right. Because those thoughts are so strong that they are breeding a whole range of emotions like worry and resentment and confusion and pain and so on. And they are completely unrelated to the beautiful ideas that I have in my head. So it's two things here. It's what we spoke about last week. Even good ideas we have in our head sometimes have no effect because we haven't connected to them. There's no doubt, as we said last week. But even if there is, we still have to deal with the other thoughts that are in our head which are breeding negative emotions. So the worry and the things that are distracting, the intruding thoughts and the intruding emotions which are holding me back from focusing, which are holding me back from being mindful, which are holding me back from being completely present, they're coming from a different source. They're coming from other thoughts. They're coming from intruding thoughts because there are many, many conflicting, simultaneous things and stories that happen in our head, which we're going to focus on in a minute. I'm explaining to you how that works in a second. So that's what we have to deal with. Now let's understand a fundamental concept. It's the concept I call the struggle. And that leads on from what I just said before. And I want to explain this from it's a very fundamental concept because it's a concept that's going to come into a number of things that we're going to talk about. And let me revisit an idea which we've talked about before, but it's understanding the makeup of the soul, understanding the makeup of the human being from a Jewish perspective. We have two souls, we are taught. Right? In many, many places, in Kabbalah, in Hasidic teachings, we've taught that we've got two souls. The human being is a very complicated machine. So we have two drivers. We have two forces within the makeup of who we are. The one is what we call the nefesh ha'alekit, the godly soul. The other one is called the nefesh ha'bamit, the animal soul. Okay? And these two souls, these two driving forces fight and battle for dominance over who we are. Now just to explain this a bit so we understand it. So the nefesh ha'alekit, the godly soul, is the driving force which motivates everything that is meaningful and purposeful. is the driving force from within us that understands values, that understands meaning and purpose, that drives us to live a better life, to be a better person, to relate to other people in a better way, to pursue spirituality, to pursue mitzvot. Anything that is meaningful and purposeful and deep is driven and motivated and activated by the godly soul. The animal soul is different. The animal soul is the driving force that we have within us that drives us and motivates and drives anything physical and material. Now, it's not always so bad. Some of the parts of the animal soul are good. It just needs to be channeled. The animal soul will want us to physically survive. The animal soul has a very important purpose. But when it's left untamed and untrained, it starts to motivate an indulgent, empty, materialistic, hedonistic type of lifestyle, which is just about the physical existence, and it's not about deeper meaning and deeper purpose and living a better life and a more meaningful life. And what the animal soul does is the animal soul is an incredibly powerful force, because the animal soul is a force, we are taught, that holds us back from growth. The animal soul at its root is egocentric, and therefore the animal soul drives us to be trapped within ourselves and not go beyond our comfort zone, not go beyond ourselves, and therefore not go out of our instantaneous limited view of a pleasurable world and a pleasurable life, to think beyond that limit, beyond that border, and to understand that there's something deeper and something more meaningful and purposeful to live a life which will bring inner fulfillment and greater purpose and meaning. So these are the true drivers. Now the problem is like this. The animal soul is very powerful. And often this is part of the struggle. Not only are there two forces, but we are taught Kabbalistically that the animal soul is sometimes stronger than the godly soul. Not stronger in essence, but stronger in how it works. It's faster. Why? Because although both souls are made up of intellectual components and emotional components, but the difference between the godly soul and the animal soul is that the godly soul is primarily dominated by thought, by intellect, by concepts, by understanding, by insight, understanding values, understanding meaning, understanding purpose. That's its starting point, to explore meaning, to explore godliness, to explore spirituality, to explore greatness and depth. The animal soul is how it sounds. It's an animal. It's an animalistic force. Animals, by definition, are impulsive, emotional beings. Okay, if you get into a fight with a bull, it's a problem. You might be cleverer, but they're stronger. Okay. If you get a dog angry, it's going to be a problem. So the fact that we might be much more intelligent doesn't help, because the strength, the impulse is much stronger. And therefore, if we don't work hard at it, the animal soul gets to the heart long before the godly soul does. Okay. When we go through a tough patch, when we go through a distracting patch, which holds us back from leading a more meaningful life, which includes being more present and getting the potential and the depth and the meaning out of every moment, those intruding thoughts are coming from the animal soul. Now, why is that so important to know? So there's a few ideas that are so important to know. It's so important to understand. First of all, the struggle is always there. And that's important to understand. We'll always have the struggle. We pray that the struggle will be kept to a minimum. But human beings are created, most human beings. In Kabbalah, we are taught that there are only very few individuals that God plants in every generation that have a different mission in life, and their mission is not to struggle, but rather to be a model of complete righteousness and purity. Very few people. Most people are created to have the inner struggle, because there's a purpose in overcoming the struggle, which we'll talk about in a moment. Okay? But more importantly, is to understand that we have these two forces. See, often we have a problem that we have secondary problems. In other words, you know, sometimes we feel guilty, and then we feel guilty why we feel guilty. Or we get angry, and then we feel angry with ourselves why we got angry. Like we beat ourselves up, which is even more distracting, and it's more paralyzing, it's more debilitating. You know why that comes? Because we don't understand the true drivers. You see, when we have feelings of ego or hate or envy or greed or indulgence or lack of self-control, whatever these things are, these are all coming from the animal soul. And it's important to know that we have an animal soul, and it's important to know where those feelings are coming from. Let me tell you a funny story. It's an old Hasidic tale, which I heard from a great Hasid who's passed away already. This was a Hasid who came from Russia. But it just brought out, it's a funny story, but it brought out a real point. His name was Remotel Kazlina. He used to come here every year, and I got to know him, and he was once leading a Fabrengen, and he told this story. And he lived in Russia under the real communist regime, where it was illegal to have religious gatherings and to daven or to learn or to do anything spiritual. It was a very, very tough time for the Jewish community in Russia. And a lot of the people lived in Russia. A lot of them were great Hasidic Jews. They were determined to overcome it, and they sort of defied the authorities, and they had underground times to learn and they, all these things. So he said there was an old Hasidic Jew who ran a factory. I don't know what the factory was. He ran a factory, and he employed a bunch of his colleagues, a bunch of guys, like they were all Hasidic Jews, to work in this factory. Okay, so they were working every day. They came to work. I don't know what they were making. Maybe it was a clothing factory. I'm not sure what it was. They were working every day. One time, he comes out of his office into the workroom where all these people were, and it was lunchtime. And he sees, what are they doing lunchtime? They're sitting and having like a Fabrengen. They're singing a few nigunim, and they're talking words of Torah, and he lost it with them. He said, are you guys crazy? Do you know where we are? I mean, do you want like the police to come in, the KGB, and send you all to Siberia? Like, are you? And he rants and raves for like 5 minutes, and he's just completely lost with them. He's going to put us all in danger. You're going to this, that, and the other. Finishes his speech, and he goes out of the room. 5 minutes later, comes back with a cake and a bottle of wine. He says, here, this is a participation in the gathering. I looked at him like, are you normal? Something, are you feeling okay? So he saw they were very surprised. So he said to them, what don't you understand? He said, when I came in, I reacted instinctively. But I know where that's coming from. It's coming from feelings of fear and anxiety. I know exactly where it's coming from. But I know what part of me it's coming from. But I couldn't control it. So I let you have it. I got angry with you. I lost it with you. But I know where inside of me it's coming from. But he said, when I went out, I remembered that when I was a small child, my father taught me that whenever you see Hasidim leading a little Fabrengen like that, you should always help them and give them a cake and a bit of wine to say L'chaim. So here it is. It's not a contradiction. It's coming from two different parts of who I am. Now, it's a silly story, but what's so deep about it is this. You know, often, two things happen. First of all, we get angry with ourselves for having a struggle, number one. And number two, often when we go through a patch, like let's say we're feeling envy or we're feeling resentment, and we know it's wrong, we kind of write ourselves off for the day. Okay, today's just a bad day, right? So we kind of prevent ourselves from doing anything good that day or focusing on anything positive that day. Why? Because today, like, I'm just Mr. Evil because I'm just in a bad mood. I'm feeling resentment, and I know to hate is not a good thing. I'm feeling guilty. I know guilty is not a good thing. I can't forgive anyone today, so I know that's not a good thing. So I'm just Mr. Mess Up today, and that's it. Right off of a day. But it doesn't have to be that way. Because when we start understanding, and this is something that's going to come up a lot till the next few weeks, when we start understanding that actually we have two drivers, two forces, right? It's not a problem to have negative thoughts because you wouldn't be normal if you didn't. It's a problem not to know where it's coming from. That's a problem. You know, ego is one of the most destructive forces in the world. Empires have fallen because of ego. Relationships have dismantled because of ego. So many things because people have self-interest and egocentric feelings. But you know that to feel ego is normal. We're all born with an ego. So how do you get rid of the ego? The answer is you don't. Most people don't. But the challenge is to know where the ego is coming from. See, if I know where the ego is coming from, but I know that I have a different side of me that can overcome that ego, it's very different. If I know that I'm suddenly in a very bad mood with someone today and I have a feeling of resentment, but I know where it's coming from. I know it's coming from the animal soul, right? But I know that I also have a godly soul. So I have a force of reason, I have a force of rationale, I have a force of values. I have a force that's godly that can fight back. So then I'm motivated to fight back. I'm not completely evil. Part of me is messing up today, but I have a different part of me. And in fact, to take it a step further, if we can go back to the bus analogy, what we need to really understand is, who is the real me? So it might not always seem that way, but the real me is the godly soul, not the animal soul. The animal soul is an intruder. Not an intruder, he's a welcome guest if he behaves himself, but it's intruder. But the animal soul is an intruder if he messes up. Now, it's an intruder that's not going away, and I get that. He's here to stay, and I need to know that. But it's only a guest. So I'm the driver. Those negative thoughts are the passengers. Those passengers are not going away. They come from the animal soul and they're there. I just have to learn to deal with them. But I need to understand that struggle is there. So two things come out of this discussion. Number one is that the struggle exists. And I just need to know where it's coming from. And number two is that the struggle is worthwhile. The struggle is going to remain. It's not going away. Because you know why? Even when we improve as human beings, even if, let's say, someone gets their anger under control and they're much less angry than they used to be, there will be other challenges. Why? Because as harsh as it sounds, but that's the way God created the human being, for a reason. Because, again, as I've said many times, we pray every single day, please do not test me. So we ask God to keep the test to a minimum, but having said that, every person has a level of struggle. We hope it's struggles that we can overcome. It's hope the struggles that we can work through. We hope that it's not harsh struggles that come from the outside, from tragedy and illness, things like that. But sometimes it does happen. But whether it does or doesn't happen, the inner struggle will always be there. Because God wants us to become stronger people. We are put on this planet to work through and become better human beings. And becoming a better human being often happens because of a struggle. To be perfect is no, as they say in Yiddish, is no kunz. It's no big achievement to live a life that that's just perfect.
Boy, it's nice.
It's nice. But it's purposeless. Right? It's purposeless. It is nice. Sometimes wish for a day like, you know, let's have a couple of days where things are just completely smooth, right? It is nice. And so we certainly, I mean, we're kind of conditioned to aspire to that, but it doesn't happen. Why? You see, the first Chabad Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, has a very famous chapter in his book called the Tanya on this. And he said, if someone has negative thoughts, listen to what he says. He says, someone has negative thoughts, which hold you back. It could be any type of negative thoughts. It could be between man and man or man and God. In other words, it could be sinful thoughts which motivate you to do the wrong thing. It could be relationship thoughts, thoughts of resentment, thoughts of hate, thoughts of ego. So it's in a chapter where he discusses joy. He discusses being positive. So he says if someone has negative thoughts, he needs to welcome them and be happy. What does it mean, welcome them? Not let them intrude. Not let them hold you back, but you need to welcome them because you need to understand that they will always be there, and you welcome them because they're there for you to overcome them and to become a stronger person. He goes on to say that if someone gets upset, why he or she entertain negative thoughts, distracting thoughts, that is the biggest egocentric thing a person could think. Because what are you? You think you belong to the select 0.1% of humanity that doesn't have a struggle? No, you're just like everyone else. Why are you special? Everyone has thoughts. Everyone has an inner struggle. See, he says that the notion for someone to get upset, why their feelings of anger, why their feelings of resentment, why their feelings of indulgence, of lack of self-control, why they popped into his or her head, that's an egocentric thing to think. Be real. That's always going to happen. You will always have those thoughts because you have an animal soul that is not perfect, and the animal soul will always spark thoughts like that. You just need to know where they're coming from so you understand the difference, so you can work with them, so you understand the strength of the godly soul, and now the godly soul has to work to dominate the animal soul. It's a lifelong process. When we finish that job, by the way, we don't need to be here anymore. So we've got a lot of work to do, hopefully, for many, many, many years. It's going to be a struggle for years to come, hopefully. Right? And he goes on to explain a very interesting concept, which he takes from Chumash. talks about the two dishes. What do the two dishes mean? So it comes from a verse in the Chumash, a very fascinating verse. The verse in the Chumash says, you know, when Yitzchak called Esav to give him the blessings, so he told him, prepare for me a dish of food that I like and then I will bless you. So the phrase in the verse is, Va'asei li mat'amim, make me dishes, make me like two types of food. So he says, what's the Kabbalistic meaning behind this? So in Kabbalah they explain the following. There are two types of foods. There are those foods that are naturally sweet, and there are those foods that are, well, the ingredients are just naturally tasty, naturally sweet, naturally good. Then there are those dishes. My cooking skills is not that great, so I'm not quite understand what I'm talking about, but I hope it makes sense. Right? There are those. No, I understand what a good dish tastes like. That part I get. But right. So there are those dishes which are made of ingredients that are not naturally tasty. They are bitter. But if you use the right amount and you put them together and you keep the dosage right and you keep away the things that you shouldn't keep away and so on and so forth, they call it sweet and sour. I have all these different things, spices, right? That if you eat them alone, they're terrible. But if you use them in the right way and you keep them under control, you produce a dish that perhaps is even more tastier. The greatest delicacies are not made from ingredients that are naturally sweet. And he says this is the human personality as well. The struggle is the most beautiful thing. When we understand the opportunity of an inner struggle, we understand the opportunity of creating the most tastiest dish out of a personality. And we keep doing that through our whole life. So, the point of this is as follows. It's to understand that we do have these two parts of our personality. Therefore, we understand that there will always be those annoying passengers on the bus. But it's knowing where that comes from, and that's okay. It's knowing that we can still do good things because we have two parts of us. It's knowing we have a bad day. It doesn't mean it has to be all bad. It doesn't mean we are all bad because it's two parts of who we are. And it also means that we understand where it's coming from, and we understand we have a different part of us that can deal with it. In fact, that different part of us, the godly soul, is the real us. So, the good news and the bad news. The bad news is these passengers are here to stay, because the struggle is there for a purpose. The good news is that we just have to learn how to deal with it. So then when we go back to that concept we talked about before, that we all experience these times which we call the times of gap, the reality gaps, as Russ Harris calls it, where something has happened to us which was unexpected, thrown us off balance, thrown us in. We always have the struggle, but the struggle becomes bigger when we go through these moments where something happens, whether it's personality related, whether it's circumstantial related, where we suddenly go into a spin of thoughts and intrusions and distractions, which kind of we just become completely lost in that fog of distraction and becomes so hard for a week, sometimes 2 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks, to actually get back to focusing, get back to being aware. The thing to understand is that those thoughts are coming from somewhere. They're not going away. We just need to learn to deal with them and learn how to manage them so that we can come back to the present, live in the moment, and bring out the meaning and purpose and potential of the now. So having that in mind, that's a very fundamental idea. And I wanted to sort of share that with you today because that's really, really fundamental understanding the whole human experience, really. But particularly when we come to these concepts, when we go through these patches of these distractions that are bombarding us that are hard to manage. So let's kind of develop a bit of a formula and start to develop some strategies. So the first thing we do is when we go through a time of difficulty is that we have to, or this gap as we call it, and we kind of walk around just bothered by something. The first thing we need to do is to pause and to remember a few concepts. In other words, it's about developing a few attitudes which won't be the answer, but it helps. In other words, we have to start with a few very important attitudes. And I'm just going to use a formula that he brings in the book. He talks about three things. He says, hold yourself kindly, take a stand, and find the treasure. So what this means essentially is the following. Hold yourself kindly is what we said before. The first thing to do is not to beat yourself up. Not to have these secondary thoughts, not to have anxiety because you had anxiety, not to have guilt because you have guilt. But to understand that it's normal, to put it back into the Jewish perspective, it's coming from the animal soul, it's coming from a place, it's there, it's meant to be there, it was there for a purpose, and we just need to deal with it. So the worst thing is when we have that bad day, or we have that patch, or we have that gap, is to start beating ourselves up. Why can't we get on top of it? And by the way, sometimes when we have those thoughts, if it's something that's happened to us which is very harsh, we need to go through a period where we don't get on top of it. And that's fine. We've talked about this before. It's just we need to remember that we do to get on top of it when we can. Right? The second thing is to take a stand. Take a stand means to make a decision. So the first thing is we need to make a decision. Before we can talk about the strategies of how to manage these distractions and the things standing in the way of us focusing and being present, we have to make a decision that we can do it. We have to make a decision that notwithstanding the struggle, I can get on top of it and I can let things go. I can let the past go. I can let the future go. I can be present. I just have to learn how. So it's a matter of taking a stand, making a decision, understanding that the power of the human being is that we could do it. We just need to learn how. And thirdly, we need to find the treasure. Find the treasure means we need to recognize that deep down we have this treasure. We need to recognize that the godly soul is stronger than the animal soul, ultimately. In other words, its intelligence, its value system, its conviction ultimately can prevail over the animal soul and get dominance, so that we can have dominance of the godly soul over the animal soul, notwithstanding that it seems the other way around. But we have that treasure within us. We have that ability within us to be able to do it. So once we've understood that and we've developed that attitude and thought about it, then we need to work on the following formula. And I think this is where we're going to go for a while. We need to have three things. When we're going through a patch of extreme distraction and difficulty, we need to do three things. The one is presence. I'm going to explain that in a moment. The other is purpose. And then the third one is dealing with the intruders, the passengers. What do I mean? So the first thing we need to do is we need to become aware, which means like this. Sometimes we go through a patch where we have these distractions, as we've outlined before. And sometimes it'll take a long time till we can actually get rid of these thoughts, right? But what we can do in the meantime is we can at least for short amounts of time just bring in the general skill of being aware. In other words, like this. What happens when we go through a patch of a gap, when we go through a patch of a destruction? We just tend to get lost. We get lost in the negativity of all these intrusive and distracting thoughts. So the first thing before we deal with the thoughts, before we deal with these intruders, we have to kind of remember that we're the driver. In other words, before we can deal with all the stuff is we have to just bring ourselves back to the present. Now, it's not going to last very long because as soon as we bring ourselves back to the present, the thoughts will again jump back at us. But the first thing we need to do is discover ourselves. In other words, before we can have the fight, we need to come back into the equation, right? Because what happens is when we're obsessed with these negativity, the us, the we, the me kind of gets lost and goes into the background. And therefore, we can develop strategies of dealing with thoughts, but there's no one to deal with the thoughts. So the first thing we need to do is to bring ourselves back to the present. And that's just about going back to the things we talked about last week, just setting aside time a few minutes to say, okay, just let me not try and not think about it for 2 minutes and just be aware of what is going on. To do the breathing exercises, to maybe just focus on gratitude for a few days so we actually start to notice the things that are going well rather than think that the whole day is just bad. Just to stop a few minutes and to try and focus what we're doing. It could be just focusing on the shower that we take in the morning without getting lost in the things we have to do the day, right? Just learning to become present again, bringing ourselves back to the present, developing a sense of presence. That's the first thing we need to do. Otherwise, if we don't do that, there's actually no one to fight the intrusive thoughts. There's no one there. So we have to bring ourselves back. And part of that is like the Modeh Ani that we talked about or maybe the morning blessings. Just remember, trying to focus on a few things during the day just to bring back the exercise, to bring back the ability of being present. Even if just for a few moments, but just rediscovering that ability of being present. The second thing is the idea of purpose. Russ Harris in his book says a beautiful line. I want to just put it up there for you because he says, much as a flower needs sunlight, presence needs purpose. Otherwise, we run the risk of being fully present in a life that lacks meaning. Okay. Presence only works and the will to fight the distracting thoughts only works if we understand the idea of being present. An idea of being present is not just to be present, particularly from a Jewish perspective, because life has a purpose. The idea of being present is not just to eat mindfully and to taste the food. That's a nice thing, but it's not. That doesn't bring a life of inner fulfillment. Because remember that we are dealing with a challenge, we're dealing with a struggle that comes from inside or from outside. We can't change the things that we can't change, but we could discover inner meaning, we could discover inner fulfillment and inner peace. And that can only come about if we understand the idea of purpose. So presence isn't enough. We have to find and think about the concept of presence, right? And what that means is, going back to the things we talked about before, about the two dishes, that we need to understand that every experience in life, even a struggle that we're going through, has the ability to bring meaning and purpose. In other words, we have the ability, as difficult sometimes as it can be, to find meaning and purpose in that experience. And sometimes, by the way, an experience that is painful actually forces us to find meaning. Because sometimes the only way to deal with it, you know, sometimes you cruise through life, and sometimes when you get a bit of a struggling experience, it forces us to reprioritize, if you think about it properly. It forces us to say, well, maybe I need to dig deeper and to find meaning and purpose in the experience. There's a famous story in the Talmud about a great sage. I've forgotten his name now, it slipped me. But there's a great sage who became unwell, and it became very serious, and it looked like things were nearing the end. And a whole bunch of his disciples came to visit him. I think Rabbi Akiva was one of them, if I remember. And they all tried to sort of make him feel better. So the one went over to him and said, Rabbi, you should feel good because you've had a very rich life. You've taught many students. And he sort of ignored him. And the other one said, Rabbi, you've been such a kind person. You've been such a Torah scholar. Everyone told him the things that he had managed to accomplish throughout his life, trying to give him strength and comfort that he really led an amazingly rich life. And he ignored all of them. Until one of his Talmidim, one of his disciples, realized what's going on. And he went over to him and he whispered in his ear and he said, Rabbi, there is purpose and meaning even in the state of suffering that you're in now. And the rabbi said, hold on a second, let me listen to what you're saying. In other words, what he was trying to convey was as follows. Everyone came over to him and said, you know, you read such a wonderful life. Things of the past. He wasn't interested in that. It didn't comfort him. Obviously, it's nice to look back and say, I've accomplished nice things. And everyone wants to have the sense of accomplishment and achievement. But being present means to find meaning and purpose in now. And he said, all that you're telling me about the things that I've accomplished throughout my life don't comfort me now. Because I need to understand the purpose of my being right now. And that's what he had to grapple with. And when the disciple says, let me help you through this, that's when he wanted to listen. He says, let me understand. Everything must have a purpose, even the state I'm in now. So let's try and understand what it is. There must be purpose. You know that this week, this Shabbat is Tu Bishvat. Right? So I want to just share with you an imagery that's good. Sometimes, you know, a visual image is good to bear in mind because it helps us anchor ourselves. It helps us sort of connect to a concept. So it's the Rosh Hashanah of trees, as we know, and it's fruit, and there's a custom, of course, on Shabbat to eat fruit, and I want you to try and do that. It's a beautiful thing. One of the things is just to thank God for the beautiful blessings that He gives us. Fruit is certainly one of the ways we experience that, all the colorful fruit, particularly the fruit that is connected to the land of Israel, like pomegranates and figs and dates and olives and things like that. But the focus of the day is on trees. Now, we know that there are many, many lessons of trees because in the Chumash it tells us that the human being is compared to a tree, and this is for many, many, many reasons, but let me give you one. So we know that the tree, the fruit tree, is made up of three parts. There's the roots, and every part resembles a different thing in the human being. So the roots represent the roots which we can't even see, but the roots is the strength of the tree. And the roots represent the core faith and the purpose and the values that become the foundation of the human being, right? Then we have the trunk and the branches and the leaves, which represent just the functionality and the personality of the person. And then we have the fruit, which is how we affect other people. Because we give birth to fruit, that's how we affect other people. Other people can benefit from us. That's the makeup of the human being. Now, sometimes we go through a very struggling period, a distracting period, a period where we just, everything is going haywire. So it's like a strong wind, a storm that we found, you know, there was the other day. They're kind of the leaves just getting tangled with each other. Everything is swaying. It looks like the tree's going to fall down. The fruit falls off and the tree's a mess. But what part, if it's a good tree, what part of the tree saves the tree? The roots, right? The roots of the tree. Often, obviously, on a day-to-day, we don't always think about what our values are. We don't always think about what our foundations are, what our belief system is. But when we go through that gap, when we go through a time where we become very distracted by negativity, very difficult to focus and function properly, bringing ourselves back to the present is important by thinking about purpose. And perhaps one of the ways to do that is a Tu Bishvat visual image, to think about the tree and to think about, to be aware of our own sort of makeup, to think about our branches, our leaves, to think about how at the moment they're not functioning very well, but then to realize that deep down we have roots. And those roots are the foundation of the purpose. In other words, that the tree could survive this if we have strong roots. If we have a desire to find meaning and purpose in every experience, which are represented by the roots will save the tree. The roots will bring back the tree to vibrancy. The roots will bring back the tree to its strength and its ability to keep growing. But we have to remember that. We have to discover that. So therefore, the first thing is present. We have to just, if we're going through a really bad patch, find moments just to become more aware. Bring ourselves back to the present. Secondly, to understand the meaning and the critical focus on the idea of purpose and meaning. And to understand that I'm going to get through this because I will find meaning and purpose even in the struggle. And then we have to go to the third part, which is now that I'm ready for this, I understand there's going to be meaning and purpose. I understand that there's I can be present, but what do I do with all these millions of thoughts that are running around my head? I was going to start some thoughts today, but we've come out of time, so we'll leave it to next week. But next week we'll talk about what do we do with those thoughts? What do we do with those intruding passengers? I'll leave you in suspense. Have a wonderful week.